Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's are times that bring families together, often reuniting several generations. These gatherings provide a chance for people to pass on old stories and reestablish family traditions, traditions that differ from one family to another and from one part of the country to another. Put together, they provide a picture of America with glimpses of the past and perhaps even the future. We decided to ask our listeners for help in collecting some of these stories, and so now, here's a sampling of family folklore.
This is Paul Groh from Larkspur, Colorado. As long as I can remember, my father has maintained one holiday dinner tradition that, well, it just wouldn't be a Thanksgiving or Christmas dinner without it. At the end of the meal, after everyone has had their fill of turkey, ham, potatoes, rolls, and stuffing, Dad will push his plate away and lean an elbow on the edge of the table. "You know," he says, and after so many years, we all know exactly what he's going to say. Some of us even mouth the words as he speaks. "You know, I don't really care for turkey because it has a foul taste."
Hi, this is John Peary from Marietta, Ohio. There's been a tradition in my family for all my 64 years, and I have no clue as to its origin. When someone has a birthday, a family member puts butter on his nose. I'd love to know where this started.
Hi, this is Marla Todd, and I live in Orangevale, California, outside of Sacramento. Every fall, the fog comes in and stays until winter. We always say it just isn't Christmas without the fog. A few nights before Christmas, when the visibility is only about 30 feet, my friends and my husband and I all pile into our cars and drive out to look at the Christmas lights. The lights disappear in and out of the fog, and the garish greens and reds and flashing whites take on a soft, magical look. And the valley oak trees look like black lace through the fog as we drive along the back roads between the houses. It's sort of weird, but we like it.
This is Art Smith from Millersburg, Missouri. A tradition in our family that started in the previous generation is the mandatory ballpoint pen as a Christmas gift. The tradition has now slid into general secretarial supplies as stocking stuffers for everyone, but the important part is the ballpoint pen. It started when, as children, my brothers and I would ask our father if he had gotten us anything for Christmas yet. This would usually start sometime around Thanksgiving. The answer was always something like, "Oh, there's lots of time yet. I'm sure I can find something." As Christmas drew nearer and nearer, we would get more and more alarmed at this response until finally, on Christmas Eve itself, we'd ask the question, reminding Dad that tomorrow was Christmas. He'd suddenly look alarmed himself and say, "Tomorrow? Oh no! Everything's closed! No, wait, there's always the all-night drugstore. I can still get you a ballpoint pen." And sure enough, the next morning, we'd each get a ballpoint pen, among other things.
This is Heather Jackson from York, Pennsylvania, and my family has a tradition that is one of a kind. Ever since I can remember, and I am now a 22-year-old college senior, the Christmas holiday brings with it a bizarre game of hide-and-seek involving, of all things, a beat-up old tennis shoe that belonged to my father when he was in medical school. Somehow, the shoe ended up under the Christmas tree as a spoof gift from my grandmother to my father, and every Christmas since, someone gets that shoe. But it's not as simple as giving it wrapped up in a shoebox. There are a number of unofficial rules concerning this ritual, the most important being that upon receiving the shoe, you must guard it with your life. The shoe has been known to mysteriously walk away, especially during the holiday dinner. And even if you make it out of the house that night with the shoe in your possession, you are still not in the clear. Spouses and siblings have been known to snatch the shoe from its hiding place at various times of the year so that nobody really knows who has it. Another rule is that when giving the shoe as a gift, you must disguise the box so that the rest of the family is caught off guard when that particular gift is unwrapped. Over the years, we have managed to go through multiple incarnations of the original shoe, occasionally with two of them showing up at the same time. When I was younger, I thought that all families had wacky traditions like this, but it wasn't until I was older and trying to explain the whole thing to other people that I realized how wonderfully crazy my family is.
My name is Gustav Pohlig from Waterloo, New York. I came to this country from Germany in 1954. Now I am 82 years old, and we still celebrate Christmas the same way today as we did 75 years ago when I was a child. The tree is not decorated till the 24th in the afternoon. We still have real wax candles in clip-on candle holders on the live tree and ornaments which came from my home in Germany. The family attends church services in the early evening, all wearing their best clothes. After church, we have a small meal, usually potato salad and frankfurters. Then I light the candles and turn off all the lights. The smell of the candles fills the room. When the children were small, I read the Christmas story from the Bible. Now we quietly reflect on the event. After about a half an hour, the candles are extinguished and we open our gifts. The tree stays up for 12 nights till January the 6th, Epiphany, when it is lit for the last time. With our children and grandchildren always celebrating with us on Christmas Eve, we follow this tradition, for the next generations do not want us to change it at all.
Howdy, this is Tony Pantera from Scottsdale, Arizona. Every Christmas, my brothers and I get together to season, grind, and stuff our own Polish sausage. This tradition was handed down to us from my grandmother, Drumsta. We always knew we were in trouble when she started speaking Polish to my mom. When we were kids, she would supervise as my parents and relatives did the sausage thing. It's not the holidays unless at some point the kitchen ends up smelling like garlic and medianka. We do a little drinking and a lot of talking. We debate what exactly the recipe is. We have it written down somewhere, but never manage to search it out. We give portions of the sausage to my other relatives. It is eaten at our midnight repast, Christmas dinner, and at Easter. It is a great time to replay events of Christmas's past, such as the time Grandma threw her teeth out with the wrapping paper.
Hi, I'm Ella Malewska, and I'm from Raleigh, North Carolina. My family is from Poland, and as Eastern Europeans, we celebrate the birth of Christ on Christmas Eve. The day is spent in preparation for the large meal that begins when the youngest child spots the first star in the evening sky. The table is first set with hay under the tablecloth to represent the manger of the baby Jesus. Then an empty seat is left for the unexpected visitor, because no one should be turned away on this night. We begin the meal with the sharing of a płatek. This is a large wafer that is usually embossed with a picture of the Holy Family. My father breaks the płatek and passes a piece to each member of the family, who, in turn, share their pieces with one another. Our meal is made of the foods of winter: mushrooms, potatoes, fish, winter vegetables, and dried fruit. Now here is where the magic begins. Somehow, every year, right before dinner was finished, the doorbell would miraculously ring. My father would go to the door and greet Gwiazdor, the star man, kind of like a Polish Santa Claus. My father, doing both voices, would have a conversation with Gwiazdor. The star man, in a low, booming voice, would ask about each member of our family, and my father would share a story about something wonderful we had done in the past year. Gwiazdor would be duly impressed and offer a blessing on the family. This was our cue to zoom into the family room for presents. As a child, I believed in Santa Claus, but that he did not come to our house. We were so special that Gwiazdor would fly all the way from Poland just to visit us.
My name is David Kehoe, and I live in Murrysville, Pennsylvania. My wife's family is of Swedish heritage. Every Christmas Eve, they have a meal that I've been told is traditional for the Swedes. The meal is entirely white. It consists of a steamed fish, usually a very large haddock, boiled potatoes, and a white sauce that is drizzled over everything. Apparently, the true traditional meal uses lutefisk, which is a lye-cured dried fish, but lutefisk is so awful that even they don't eat it. The only thing that isn't white is a mustard sauce that is also served with the fish. The mustard sauce is intentionally made to be scorchingly hot. It is, I suppose, to cover the taste of the lutefisk. But while the lutefisk is gone, the mustard sauce remains. The topic of conversation every Christmas is whether this year's mustard sauce is hotter or not as hot as last year's sauce. As one who married into the family, there are four daughters, I had to pass the test of eating the mustard sauce, as did all my brothers-in-law. I have not eaten it since and yearly look forward with dread to this otherwise bland meal. My wife suggested that my family had no traditions based on our heritage, so I decided to institute some, and to do away with the fish meal as well. Being of Irish extraction, I purchased a book of Irish traditions and discovered that they too have a special meal eaten on Christmas Eve. It consists of white fish, boiled potatoes, and a white sauce.
Hi there, my name is John Aiken, and I live in Chicago. We have a family tradition that was brought up from Glasgow, Scotland, when my father and his folks immigrated to the U.S. back in the 1920s. It's called First Footing and happens just after midnight of the new year. The tradition has it that the first person to enter the house after the stroke of midnight, or the first foot, will be the provider for the household. That person should be carrying a gift to symbolize this. Usually, in the Great Scots tradition, that gift was a bottle of liquor. If that person isn't the provider for the household, bad luck will haunt the home for the duration of the year. During one particularly brutal blizzard on New Year's Eve, my parents were having a party. When the time came for my father to exit the rear door and run around the house to the front door for the first foot, he was slowed by the snowdrifts, and our next-door neighbors reached the door before he did. When my mother answered the door, she didn't realize that this would be the first foot, so she let them in. Naturally, my father was horrified, but the party continued. That year, he had a heart attack, which he recovered from, and then my grandmother broke her hip. Fortunately, she also recovered. Ever since then, though, the first foot tradition has carried even more weight. I'm now married with a family of my own, and the first foot tradition lives on in our house.
Family stories collected from our listeners by NPR's Margaret Lowe Smith, thanks to NPR member stations WDET in Detroit, KCFR in Denver, WOUB in Athens, Ohio, KXJZ in Sacramento, California, KBIA in Columbia, Missouri, WAER in Syracuse, New York, KJZZ in Phoenix, Arizona, and WUNC in Chapel Hill, North Carolina.